This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what they're paying now. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set for free. Just pay shipping. Start your free trial today at harrys.com/knowhow.
You've seen it. You can't unsee it.
Your questions are answers?
Know-How. It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Balasair.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to be showing you some of the projects that we've been geeking out to so you can take them home and geek out on your own.
That's right.
Hippo, rocking the t-shirt again.
Back to the t-shirt, Padre.
Back to, I'm not
it's
sure.
Hot in here.
Here's the thing. Memes expire. And I'm
what?
Pretty sure this meme's dead.
It's not a meme. It's just an amazing movie that was then picked up by Netflix called Kung Fury.
Now, I was unclear on that. Are they going to just remake it, but with a bigger budget? Or is this a whole idea of like turning it to a series?
Like a series? Probably yeah. A series.
Series
I have
would
no
be
idea.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Like, the story is very simple, but the...
That's the thing that worries me. Because, I mean, it was fantastic as like...
This was
something that someone just put together because he wanted to.
Right.
Now that it has to be a series and it actually has to have some return on investment.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like the Saturday night skits that they try to turn into movies. And
right.
It's like, oh, it was just a skit.
Will it still have the same feel? The thing that was appealing about it too was that this guy who made this, I mean, we're kind of getting off topic.
I know, but, we're way off topic. We just started.
But when he made this, it was like he quit his job and he was just, he did it because he's like, I have to make this. And it wasn't like he was trying to make like a series out of it or a lot of money or whatever. And then it happened to get like really popular. And it was just, it was so silly.
It was awesome.
Yeah, I loved it.
But, you know, what I think our audience will like about this is it's very much in the spirit of the geek. It's the spirit of the maker. The whole idea of, I just have to finish it. I mean,
yeah.
I started. I have to do this. This is
right.
It's not even an option.
I'm passionate
it needs to
about
be done.
Something. Yeah, exactly. Like you want to let your inner creativity
explode.
Yes,
like a cobra being
like we
bitten
do.
By a wolf as it's struck by
struck
lightning,
by lightning.
A hurricane
right.
or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, as your sensei gets like cut, or your partner gets cut in half. Yeah,
folks, if you don't know what we're talking about, you need to go watch Kung Fury
Please.
On YouTube. Please do that. But Brian, we're not here to talk about Kung Fury. We're here to do some feedback. Remember, we did promise, and we've been pretty good. We've been pretty good about this over the last couple of months since the new year started.
We're trying.
But we kind of. I got a couple of emails reminding me that those 6 to 8 months that we did no feedback, that there was a lot of posts that we never answered. It kind of pulled from the archives a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. We don't want people to be too eager for us to answer their questions, right?
Right, right.
We want to let them stew for a little bit in case they figure it out on their own. And if they don't, we'll revisit it.
There we go.
Or if we don't know, we won't answer it at all. But yeah.
Or we'll get the wrong answer because that's how we roll.
Or we'll talk about Kung Fury instead.
Yeah. Well, let's get off the Kung Fury. Let's get into the stew. What's the first ingredient?
Right into the stew. All right. This one comes from Not doctor.
Doctor?
He's not a doctor.
Him. Okay.
I saw Robotnik.
Rockenbach.
But it's Mr. It's Mr. Rockenbach. Has the subject of balancing the quadcopter been addressed on Know How? If so, please point me to that episode. Okay, thanks, Kitas.
Okay, this was from last May, and it was right after we had finished the last of the quadcopter builds. We did talk a little bit about balancing.
So that dates it a little bit. Yeah.
It's dated, yeah. But this is still good information to have because it you need it today.
Yes.
Very important, and the reason why you want your quadcopter balanced is because you want to have the full amount of power available for all your motors. Here's the thing. Let's take a quadcopter. Like, this is our Alien X. That's, you know, this is the first one we built. Super heavily modified. It really shouldn't be flying anymore. It's crashed so many times, I'm pretty sure it has structural damage.
But there's, you know, like, hairline fractures.
There's hairline fractures. It's got the little gimbal on the front. These arms have never actually been broken, but... Really close.
I've managed to break a few of those.
Yes, you did. We had video of that.
That's what they're for.
It was exactly. But the whole idea is, remember, you need 4 vectors of thrust to pull this thing up, right? And these all of these motors have the same amount of total power available to it. But if it's imbalanced, so let's say that the front is heavier than the rear because it's got the gimbal. Mm-hmm. In order to hold this thing level, the front motors have to operate at more of their power in order just to keep it level.
Right.
But what that means now is that I've got maybe the front motors are at 80% and the rear motors are at 50%. Well, that's 30% of power that I don't have available when I do want to do maneuvers, right?
Right.
So the more balanced your quadcopter is, the more agile it's going to be, which is why it's important to balance. Mm-hmm. We don't typically have to worry about centerline balance, because unless you're building some weird build, you're going to have equal weight distribution from side to side. Mm-hmm. But where it does become an issue is from front to back, and that's because I've got heavy items like my gimbal and like my battery. Now, here's the rule. You want your balance to be wherever your flight controller is.
Right.
That's because, remember, that's the piece.
Point.
Precisely. That's the brain. That's the piece of equipment that's going to decide what is making this thing level. Mm-hmm. Right? So, for example, if you go to the overhead, Alex, right here, they know where I'm going to be mounting my flight controller, which is dead center in this middle plate. There's two little holes here. What I've done in the past is I'll either take a piece of string or some sort of like stiff wire, and I'll just do this. I'll lift it up. Now, if you go to the front view, the wide view, there you go. See, if I'm holding it there, notice how it's basically level.
Right. And you're able to do that by pushing the battery towards the back?
Precisely. This is why when we designed this, we made it so that it has this Velcro strip that I could slide the battery forward and back, because moving that battery will balance it out. Now, here's the thing. In order for you to balance properly, you got to get everything on the quadcopter that's going to actually be on it in flight. Don't right. balance this and then put the battery in, because that's silly.
Yeah.
If I take the battery out, look how imbalanced this is. Now, this thing is just
front heavy.
It's completely front heavy. Right. Now, even in this is not its regular trim, because I'm still missing the GoPro.
Right.
And so. I'd want this as I'm going to fly it in order to trim it properly. Mm-hmm. And once you have that, you can hold it by that center line, and as long as it's more or less balancing out, it means you're right. going
to get it
save.
Close. It doesn't have to be absolutely precise. I mean, I guess you could probably make some sort of some sort of hanging device so that you can test out if you're doing multiple quads or something like that. It might
Precisely.
Be a good idea to do.
Now, what I did is I actually have a stand that I 3D printed that's exactly the size mm-hmm. of this. And what I can do then is I can actually do it from the bottom pivot points rather than the top, because the bottom ones are even more susceptible to being unbalanced. Because on the top plates, the weight of the quadcopter is kind of hanging on it. On the bottom plate, there's a lot of weight above the balance, which means it's going to be really, really unstable. And that's kind of what I want when I'm balancing it. I want to get as close as possible. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a problem. When I'm flying this thing, I do swap out batteries. I will go between 3S and 4S and different capacities, and those batteries will weigh different amounts. Mm-hmm. So just be aware of that. I mean, anytime you make a change to the configuration, you kind of have to rebalance it, which means you need to choose a balancing system, a procedure that's going to be easy enough for you to actually do it in the time you have.
Okay. What if you run into the issue where you have the battery is way lighter and you have the gimbal and you're kind of stuck that way? Can you set the motors to be to spin faster, right, through the settings?
Well, I mean, they'll automatically spin
faster. They'll do it. Yeah, compensate.
Exactly. If you've got the self level set on the controller, it's just going to naturally spin it up. But then the problem you're going to have
you're sapping
power. It means that you don't have as much power available for you when you want to punch out.
Right.
So let's say I need to go straight up. I have to punch. I'm out of control and I need to get it away from people. The problem is, let's say these are 50%, these are running 90%. Mm-hmm. I don't have 50% power to punch up. I've got 10%, because these are only going to speed up to as fast as these can go. And if these get hit 100% and these are still at 60, that's it.
Right.
That means I'm leaving a lot of power on the table, and that can all be fixed just by making sure I'm balanced.
Yeah, and I think also when I was first flying, I was struggling a lot when I first started, because my quad wasn't balanced. I thought it was me just the learning curve, but it was because my quad was unbalanced that it would kind of throw off the inertia, and it would the quad would have to compensate, and it would take it longer if it was out of balance. Like, I try and move left or right, and it would kind of swerve a little bit more. Like, when it's in balance, it would snap side to side.
Yep.
So if you're ever having issues flying and you think maybe it's my controls or something, definitely check the balance before you fly.
Precisely. Anytime you notice that it's kind of sluggish in one direction but not in another, that's almost always a balance problem. Like you, if you go full forward and it just screams, you're like, okay, that's good, and then you pull back and it's just kind of struggling to go back. It's imbalanced.
I noticed that a lot on my 250 quad that I had because it was really hard to get. The battery was basically the balance point on it.
Right.
So if you didn't have
it
centered.
And the battery was on top, which,
exactly.
That's hard. The other thing to remember here is this is also the reason why you don't want anything sliding around during operation.
Yeah. Or a battery coming loose and dangling like while you're flying.
No.
That's bad.
Think about that. Take this battery. Now, don't just remove it, but have it hanging like this. So as it's going back and forth, it is dynamically changing the balance of the quadcopter. That's bad news.
No. Well, remember when we do our battle drones with the Simas? Hit each other midair and the batteries would pop out.
And we're like, it's okay, fair game.
It's a little bit funnier to see the little Simas suffer, but when you see your giant 450 swooping in the air like that, that's scary.
That's scary because, I mean,
these can hurt people.
These really can hurt. One last bit about this. The main thing that is going to slide around on a quadcopter is going to be the battery. So that's why we always use Velcro. It just keeps it a little bit firm. But I also strap it down. I've seen videos of people just like they pop it on top with Velcro and then leave it. Don't do that.
No.
This part actually does hurt if it falls off. Because your quadcopter will suddenly become a rock.
And B, if it ever gets pierced or like falls off your quad and, batteries explode. Don't pierce LiPo batteries.
Stop exploding, you cowards.
Especially if your battery is really puffy, like some of ours have gotten.
Hey, puffy, it's not puffy. It's got character.
It's got
character. That's what it is.
Lots
puffy.
Of character.
Lots and lots of character. Okay, cool. So that's our quadcopter tip. Let's move on. What we got next?
All right, this next one comes from Daniel, and he asks, Padre mentioned on Windows Weekly episode 471 that one of his best tech purchases was a portable accessory screen for his laptop. This allowed him to use dual screen setup on the go. Two questions. What is this screen, and can it be used with a stylus for digital notes, specifically as an input for OneNote?
Very, very good question. And yes, I still hold to that, even though that was a year ago. The best purchase I've ever made for my mobile kit maybe the laptop. This is a great laptop. I really, really like this, even though I'm still thinking about that Razer Blade Stealth because I think it's sexy.
Yes, it
is. This is light.
Well, you have that one with the three monitors, right, that folds out? That went missing
that
from CES. Yeah.
Oh my God! Seriously, that's horrible. That's horrible. No, but what he was mentioning is the ASUS. This is the MB169 series of portable USB monitors. Absolutely, without a doubt, worth every penny I paid for it. So this is the version that he was talking about. You've seen me use this on Twiet and Windows Weekly. Yeah. This is the USB version. If you go to that, actually, it's the bottom one, Alex. It's about $190, it's the MB169V Plus. This is an IPS screen. It's 1920 by 1080. It's a USB 3.0. Now, the whole idea about this is it's using not DisplayPort, but a DisplayLink chipset, right? So it's the full HD USB 3.0. It's the first one on that page. Both of those links are the same. If you just go back to the page, you had it. There you go. And click that first one on the page. There you go.
That
there you go.
Box.
So it's a panel. It's a 15.6 inch panel. It's IPS, so you've got really good viewing angles. It's nice and bright. This thing is light. It weighs about as much as my current laptop, which makes it a nice compact kit. It's all under 5 pounds, including the power adapter for my laptop.
Yeah.
But what this does is, if you look at this. It's a little bit larger than the screen that's on my laptop, but it's a very nice compliment. Sitting right next to it, it really does give me a dual screen experience on the go, which is exactly what I was looking for.
Yeah, and it doesn't take up a lot of space either.
Nope.
It's not super heavy. I think every time we've gone to Vegas, we've been there. Like, you'll set up everything on your kitchen table for editing, and it'll be like dual monitor with the laptop, and like it looks like a full editing studio.
It does. And I used to actually carry around like a full size monitor. and this is so much better. It's easier, it's lighter, and it's just easier to take up and sit and tear down. I use this in coffee shops. I mean, this has traveled around the world. It's a little banged up, but I mean, considering what it's gone through, it's doing quite well.
Yeah, and I know for my workflow, I like to have my main screen be whatever I'm working on, so editing, doing a Word document or something, and then second screen, YouTube videos and things like that.
Precisely.
On the other side.
Precisely. You know. The other thing I've done with this is you can, just like any other monitor, because Windows will treat it, actually Windows and OS X will treat it just as a regular monitor, I can switch it from portrait to landscape and back and forth, which allows me to like do a full page of text.
Oh, nice.
And the other way I've used it is I help a couple of Jesuits when they're writing. They're writing dissertations or they're writing articles. And I like this. We go to a coffee shop, and I'll sit this up on the back of my laptop. So I have my screen. He has this screen. I give him his own Bluetooth mouse and keyboard, and we can do, like, group editing. We'll just go back and forth.
Oh, that's awesome. Good idea, yeah.
So flexible. Now, you should know that because this is using Display Link, not Display Port, there is a chipset in here. So what it's doing is it's using the power of the whatever video chipset you're using on your laptop, either the integrated graphics or a dedicated part. That's actually generating the graphics. And then it's sending it over the USB bus, which means a tiny bit of latency.
Okay.
Because it has to be packaged and then sent over the bus.
That makes sense.
Yeah. The other thing is there are USB 2.0 versions of these kinds of monitors, not just from Asus, but everywhere. Display Link became incredibly popular. We were one of the very first, when I say we, I mean before I was on Twit, very first to interview Display Link because I saw their tech at CES. They had a guy just walking around wearing some of the stuff.
Right.
And I thought it was awesome. And they've really grown since that USB 2.0, which really topped out at 720p.
I was going to say, the latency on 2.0 probably isn't great.
Yeah, and the tearing was really, really bad. But there is another version of this for those people who absolutely cannot handle any sort of lag, like gamers, but have a newer device, and that is this. This is the Asus. If you go back to that same page, Alex, it's the first link that came up. This is actually less expensive. That other one was $190. This one's $150 or less. This is essentially, if you go to my overhead, this is the same panel. There we go. The same panel, same product, but it's USB-C.
It's because it's black and it's taking up the full.
Let's do this. It's a USB-C panel rather than a Display Link panel.
Oh, okay.
And this is using the alternative mode. So USB-C has the ability to do
power and send video. Right?
Power and send, but I can also do Display Port over USB-C. So there is no chipset. It is actually a monitor.
Okay. So is that why it's a little bit cheaper then?
That's why it's a little bit cheaper, because it doesn't have the Display Link technology in it. But what this means is this is not a USB monitor in the sense that I could plug it into any USB port. I can't use a USB-C to USB adapter. It needs a laptop or desktop that has Display Port alternate mode functionality enabled.
So how do you know if you have that?
Well, because if you look at the USB-C port on your laptop, you'll see a little. It looks like the Display Link.
I've got the Microsoft Surface here.
Does that even have USB-C?
No.
No. So that's a no go.
Oh.
Yeah. But if you do have a USB-C notebook that is Display Link or Display Port alternate mode enabled, this is fantastic. I used it on that the Acer Spin 7. That we had a while back, and it is gorgeous.
That was the foldable laptop, right?
That was the foldable, yeah. And the nice thing about that is, again, no lag. It isn't a Display Link. It's a Display Port monitor, which means what you see is exactly what you get. As fast as you can generate the graphics, as fast as it can be displayed on the IPS screen, this goes. And again, this is 1920 by 1080.
So using both these monitors, too, have you noticed, like, is there a big battery drain if you don't have your laptop plugged into a power source?
Yeah,
that makes sense, because you're powering. That's probably the most battery draining thing you could add to your laptop, other than a graphic intensive thing.
Right. Well, I mean, when you think about it, now that all laptops are SSD enabled, the single biggest power drain is the monitor, the screen. You've got a backlight that's on all the time. Right. So I'm adding a backlight that's bigger than the screen that I currently have on my laptop. Yeah, it's going to have an adverse effect on my battery life.
And then the follow-up question was, neither of these are touch-enabled. You can't use a stylus with these.
Right. He asked about that. He wants to know if he could use it as an input for OneNote. These models, unfortunately, not. Now, there is an add-on product that we've been playing with kind of works. It basically hangs off the top of your screen, and it gives you touch.
Enabled. We saw that at Mobile at, Focus. IFA. Or at IFA.
Yeah, over in Berlin.
Is that out?
It's out-ish. It kind of...
Ish.
It works.
It was a cool concept. Like, if it worked.
Well, the issue with that technology is it needs to know the exact size of the screen to work properly. So if you have a screen that's even a little bit off, the touches don't show up in the right place.
Yeah, because what we're talking about, it was like a little USB...
Like a bar that hangs on the top of your monitor.
Yeah, and you set it like at the top of your keyboard, and it would kind of look up towards your screen, and anywhere you touched, it would try and detect where you were touching.
Precisely, yeah. So... Unfortunately not. Now, there are some monitors out there, same sort of technology, DisplayLink, that do have touch enabled. I have not been happy with any of them.
Oh, okay.
I tried about a dozen.
And they're probably expensive, too. Right?
They're way more expensive, and for me, it's the display comes first. It has to be a good display. It has to be easy to use. It has to be durable. And some of those touch ones that just, they're too clunky, they're too thick, they're too expensive. Or the worst case is they draw so much power that the backlight actually flickers. That just drives me crazy.
Oh, yeah, that would drive me insane.
Yeah.
So I guess that we can't really give you an answer for that. But if you have a chance to play with a Surface Pro 4, I've been really happy with the stylus on that. That's not just an extra monitor. That's a whole new machine, but it's an option.
Yeah, so if you are looking for an accessory, an absolutely vital accessory, one that is Padre approved, it's these. It's the Asus MB169 series, either the USB 3 version or the USB-C version. Get these. You will not be sorry. And, I mean, this is one of those purchases that will carry on from notebook to notebook to notebook to notebook.
Right.
And, by the way, I can use multiples. So, like, for example, on that Spin 7, I was using both of these at the same time. So I had a little...
And why does that?
I could use more, but then I might look geeky.
Oh, right. That's always been your biggest fear, hasn't it?
I know. I'm worried about that.
Then you also use the case to prop it up, too, don't you?
Yeah. Okay. I should probably mention that. I am not a super big fan of the way that the case system works on this.
Looks a little clunky.
It is a little bit clunky. And like the way that the, if you go to the overhead, the way that the cable is held in here, it doesn't work so well. And basically, both cases work the same way. You kind of fold this thing over on yourself, and it goes in like that. It works.
Yeah.
It totally works. I have been promising myself to 3D print a better case for this. I just
like a little
really
stand or something. all things in due time. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Now, when we come back, Brian, we got a little something something. Remember, it was a couple of months back, someone asked us about that doggone Duino.
Yes.
They wanted a little help with a project that they were working on. Well, we had another question that goes way, way back with someone who wanted a better way to turn things on and off. Now, that's kind of cryptic, but that's cryptic for a reason. We're going to get right to that. But first, these messages. This episode is brought to you by Harry's. Well, for decades, the shave experience has been monopolized by just a few companies who overcharge you for their products, knowing that they've got you hooked. And what this means is that the shave experience has been horrible. It's not something that we look forward to. It's something that we have to do. But what if I told you that there was a company out there that could not just give you a better shave experience, but could make shaving fun? That's exactly what we've got with Harry's. Now, Harry's is a company that has relentlessly decreased prices by owning their own factory. They bought a factory so they can make their own blades. And then they started making customizable kits that are just, well, in essence, the wonderful nature of shaving. If you haven't heard of Harry's before, it was started by two best friends, Jeff and Andy, and they were fed up with being overcharged for razors, so they decided that Harry's would be the answer. A Harry's shave kit start at just $15, and they include everything that you need for a close, comfortable shave. Weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimming blade, rich lathering shave gel, a travel cover so that you can always travel with your kit, and of course, the assurance that Harry's is always trying to give you the best quality at the lowest possible price. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades that they want you to try their shave set for free. You just have to cover shipping when you sign up. You heard that right. Start your free trial today at harrys.com/knowhow. That's harrys.com/knowhow. And we thank Harry's for their support of Know How. Okay, Brian, so we do have a more complicated way to turn things on and off, but one that can be run with an RC transmitter and receiver.
Because who wouldn't want to complicate turning things on and off?
Precisely, right? I mean, you can't Rube Goldberg unless you actually Rube Goldberg.
That's right. Go all in, yeah.
Let's go all in. So what do we got?
All right, this one comes from Wayne, and he asks, I am trying to figure out a way to close a connection with my RCTX using a spare channel that's not passing any electricity like 5 or 12 volts. I know how to do this with a servo and a mechanical switch, but there must be another way. I thought that the TurnEG transmitter controlled switch might work, but apparently it needs a voltage on one wire to make the connection. I checked the red wires using an ohmmeter, and there was no difference when switched on or off. Any ideas?
Okay, so what he's talking about is this. This is one of these TurnEG remotely triggered switches. If you go to the side view there, you get a better...
It's so tiny.
It's so tiny, and it works really, really simple. So this goes into your receiver, and it uses a PWM signal to figure out whether or not this should turn on or off. It'll pass voltage. Unfortunately, what he's figured out is unless you're passing at least 5 volts through this thing, they tend not to want to turn on. It's almost like that solenoid valve we played with during the Groduino project.
It needs like back pressure.
It needs a little bit of voltage. If there's not a little bit of voltage, the solid state switch won't actually throw.
I see.
So what he needs is he needs something that's mechanical. So he said he could figure out a way to do this with a servo, which was actually using a servo to like physically move a switch.
Right.
We've got actually an easier way to do it. Well, maybe not easier. We've got a better way to do it that is actually cheaper than using a servo and a mechanical switch.
Prove it, Padre. Okay. I don't believe
I'm
going
to prove it. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to need to have ourselves our transmitter, right? This is our trusty FlySky. It's the very first one we had when we started doing quadcopter projects.
Looks like a robot face.
It does look... It's like a happy robot face.
Yeah. Oh, God, you're touching his eyeballs.
He's okay with it. Now, I'm also going to need an Arduino. And in this particular case, I'm bringing out a little breadboard. You'll notice that I've got a couple of components I've already got on here. I've got two LEDs. Mm-hmm. I've got the relay switch. I've got my Arduino's power already tied into the power rails on this breadboard.
Right.
What we want is we want to trigger this relay, which we did in the Groduino project, so we know that that's possible, but we want to trigger it with input from the transmitter.
Cool.
Which we can do, because what we're going to do is we're going to read the PWM value from the receiver, and then based on that PWM value, we're going to do something to the relay.
Okay, that makes sense.
So let's go ahead and wire this up. Super simple wiring, because everything is 5-volt logic. Everything's going to work just fine.
Right.
So the first thing we're going to want to do is we're going to want to go ahead and remember the way that a relay works, when we energize the coil, it will physically throw the switch. You'll actually hear it go click.
Yep.
And it's just like moving that switch with a servo, except in this case, it's much more simple, right? Mm-hmm. And much more reliable. So I'm going to have to give this ground power, just like this. So from my ground into one of the pins. The other one is going to go to my Arduino. What this means is that I will, if I energize, I'm going to use pin 7, let's say. 7.
Okay.
If I energize pin 7, it's actually going to throw the relay. So the relay knows, okay, go ahead and turn on. The other thing I want to do is, even though he's not passing voltage through the relay, I'm going to pass a little bit because I need to show that this is actually working.
Right. So we've got the little LEDs there.
Right. So let's do this. So I'm going to pass 3.3 volts. Like so. So right now, the green LED is lit up.
Right.
Because remember, it's a two-position relay. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be green, and then when I throw it,
it should go red.
Right. Cool. Okay, so the other thing I need to do is I need to hook up this. This is my receiver. This is the little device that's actually going to receive the commands from my transmitter and allow my Arduino to read what position it's at.
And that looks really familiar because that's what goes on our quads.
Yeah, and actually, this one was pulled out of... Remember that quadcopter that I... rapidly disassembled against a fence.
Is that what we're calling it?
It was a controlled disassembling.
Yes. I thought we called it the Balisair approach.
It was so sad, too, because it was like the Wile E. Coyote, where all the plastic in the frame had disintegrated, but wiring was still kind of splayed out against the fence.
It was like,
I'm sorry, little quadcopter.
We can rebuild you or take you apart.
But, I mean, the receiver survived, so
it was good. Bright side.
It is a little bit flaky, which is why I took it out of circulation.
Okay, that's why we're using it for this project.
Right. It still works. works. It's just sometimes it just decides to do something I didn't tell
it. The amazing part is that anything off of that works at all.
Right?
You know?
Right.
After what you did to it.
Yeah, go figure. But okay, so super simple. If we go back over here, what I need to do is I need to give it 5-volt power. So ground goes into ground and voltage goes into voltage. Let me turn this on. Oop. There we go. And so if you look at this, see that red light? So I am connected.
And there's power going to it.
There's power going to it. But that's just power. I also need to put input into my Arduino. So in this particular case, I'm going to use, let's say, pin 8. So in pin 7, I'm going over to the circuit that will charge the relay.
Mm-hmm.
And in pin 8, I've got the input from my receiver.
Right. So if you're mapping it out, the controller will send a signal to this that will then go to their Arduino, which will then pass it to the switch.
Precisely. And so from this setup, what I'm going to do is this one switch on the side here, I'm going to have this set to turn that light on and off.
Cool.
Okay? All right. So let's actually look. Let's build the code that will allow us to do this. Alex, if you go to my screen here, super simple programming. This is actually using most of the code that we had from the very easy Growduino setup. So we're going to have to declare a couple of variables here. The first thing I want to do is I want to do an integer. It's going to be called relay1 relay1. I'm going to set it to 7 because that's where I plugged in my relay, right?
Right.
I'm going to have another variable called PWM pin. So this is PWM. This is the pin that the PWM device is connected to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to set that for 8.
Right.
And again, remember, the reason why I do this is because I want to make it easier to reassign. So if I decide that I want to change those pins rather than hunting through my code, it's right at the top.
Right.
Okay. The next one I'm going to do is I'm going to create a variable called PWM value. Hold on. There we go. Get on the right screen. Value. And I don't need to set a value for that because that's going to be filled by whatever's coming in from, the receiver.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Setup. So what we need to do is we need to declare two pins. So pin mode for relay 1, which is pin 7, and that's going to be an output because that's going out to the relay.
Makes sense.
There we go. I need to change color. The next one is pin mode.
It's instinctual, isn't it?
Fingers have the dumbs today. So this is going to be my PWM pin. And this is going to be input because I'm coming in from the receiver.
And PWM pin is set to 8.
Correct. And then I'm going to do serial.begin 9600. I'm setting it for 9600 baud. That's my communication speed. That's all I need in my setup. Now let's do the loop. This is, again, if I was doing this for real, what I'd want to do is I'd want to subdivide the code. So I'd put it out into individual functions. We're not doing that. We're doing something super, super simple. I'm going to use a new function. And the new function is called pulse in. Let me explain what that does. So I'm going to do PWM value, which is the variable that I created up top, equals pulse in, which is a function that's built into the Arduino library. Remember, I didn't include any libraries, so this is always in there.
And that's why it highlights, too, right?
Right, exactly. If it highlights, it means I'm using a function that's already in there, right? I'm not defining it. I'm not creating it. It's built in. So I'm going to go pulse in PWM pin, because I need to tell it where the source of the PWM value is going to be located, and high. Let me explain how this works. When I run this into the variable called PWM value, this function is going to listen to the pin assigned by PWM pin, which is 8. So it's going to listen to pin 8. It's going to wait for a high signal. So when it gets to the high voltage, once it gets to high, it's going to start listening until it gets to low.
And that's the switch off.
Well, no, that means that's the value. That's the PWM value.
Okay.
That's how it listens. It listens from one to the next.
Right.
That determines what the value is going to be.
Okay.
I can also set this from low, so it listens from a low to a low. But in this particular case, I'm listening from high to high. Same difference. All right, so I've got that. That's going to give me my value from my receiver. Let's go ahead and see what that actually looks like. So serial print line. And I'm going to go ahead and give myself the value of PWM value. And all this will do is it will print and then go down to the next line all of the different values that it's receiving from the receiver.
Okay.
Okay, so let's go ahead and do that. What we're going to do is send this like so. Make sure I'm sending it to the right port, COM9. Make sure I'm sending it to the right board, which is Arduino, and send. Let's see if I get any errors. Compile and uploading.
Looks good.
And done. Okay, so let's go ahead and open up a serial monitor. And, oh, I have to turn on the... Okay, so if you go back to my screen, these are the values that it's getting from that the receiver.
Right.
Right, so if I switch... Oh, there we go, see? So it'll go back. So that's off. That's on. Now, this is going to be different because PWM works differently on different receivers. Mm-hmm. So on this particular case, I know that when my switch is off, I'm around 990.
Right.
When my switch is on, I'm going to be about 1900 or so.
So now you're going to have to set those as the parameters?
Correct. Remember, there are other controls on this transmitter. So, for example, if instead of this, if you go to the side view, if instead of this I use this, that value would actually like go up a little bit rather than flipping on and off. But I'm just using this one because I only want on and off.
Okay.
Right? So you hold on to that.
Sure.
What we need now is we need some sort of decision tree inside of our programming. We need a way to say when the relay should be thrown and when it shouldn't be thrown.
Right.
And this is how we're going to do it. Hold on, let me reassemble this real quickly. Like, shoo. Boom. We're going to put a series of if, else, then loops. If you go back to my screen, let's get rid of this because we don't want that there. I'm going to say if PWM value is less than, and I can choose any value that I think is going to work. Remember that value does change a little bit, so I don't want to be too close. I'm going to say 1100. So if it's less than 1100, then the first thing I want to do is digital write. And notice how it changes, so it's a function it recognizes. Relay 1, 0. So if it is less than 1100, it's going to write a 0. So turn off relay 1, which is pin number 7, which is what the relay is connected to. Right? So I'm also going to do serial print line, or print.
Mm-hmm. Print.
Print, there we go. PWM value, because I want to see what the value is. This is all debugging, by the way. In the final code, you wouldn't actually have to put this.
Okay.
Serial print. I'm going to add a tab here. Where is that? Kyo, you silly laptop. There we go. T. And then serial print line.
Oh, okay.
Pring?
Yeah, pring. Stop that. There you go. And relay position.
Okay, cool.
We're going to say relay position 0. All right. So that's if it is less than 1100, else, so if it's not, because there's only two values here, right?
Right.
Else.
So above 1100.
Correct. Let me close that off. So.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you. Digital write. Relay 1. So same code, but I'm going to send 1 instead of 0. Serial print, pring again, PWM value, serial print. I'm gonna add another tab. If I can find that key, there we go. And serial print line because I wanna move down one line.
Mm-hmm.
Relay position 2. All right, so that I seem to have an extra...
Double bracket.
Get that out of there. All right, so let's go ahead and upload this. It's compiling and done uploading. Okay, so, Brian, if you go to the overhead, actually, Alex, go ahead and flip that switch. There we go.
Whoa.
So now what this Arduino is doing is it's listening to the PWM constantly, coming from the receiver... And it's allowing you to, with that switch, you can toggle back and forth.
That's cool.
Okay. Now, the cool thing about this is we are passing electricity through this right now. But even if we're not, so what what Wayne Hobbins wanted to do was he wanted to do this without power, right?
Right.
But if you listen, it's still switching.
Still doing it, yeah.
Because it is a physical switch inside of there, except I don't have to have a clunky servo mechanism that's actually throwing a switch. It's just doing it inside that package.
Awesome.
Yeah, and this is our prototype board, of course, but I could do this with a nano tied to a relay. That's it.
Right.
Super, super, super small. The entire circuit is going to cost me about $3.
That's pretty cool. And yeah, so the 5 volts from the Arduino is enough for this.
Totally enough. Yeah. Absolutely enough. I mean, that's, now some people have tied this directly into the receiver. You can kind of do that, but it's iffy because even when you have this in off, it's not like it turns off the circuit.
Right.
It's just sending a lower value.
Okay.
So you'd have to find a relay that exactly matches what this is outputting. That's very difficult. And this way, I mean, the cool thing about doing it this way is that Arduino is being grossly underutilized. I mean, right. if you go back to my screen, Alex, this is only using 7% of the program storage space. And that's with those serial print lines, which I don't need. I only have that in there for debugging.
Can we see the debugging?
Actually, that's a good idea. Let's turn on the serial monitor. And... Oh. There you go. So when you flip that back and forth. Or I went 0 and 2 instead of 0 and 1 because my brain was with stupids.
Well, you're going for quantum computing.
Exactly. So, I mean, look how simple that was. We did that in, what, 5 or so minutes?
Right. And it's instantaneous, too. It's
instantaneous.
Fun.
And, you know, versus this, which is like a $10 switch, I've got a $3 switch that can do oh so more. I could tie 6 different channels into this Arduino. In fact, I could tie 10 different channels into this Arduino.
And then program each one of these
and
buttons.
Program each of them to do something different. Throw a different relay.
Very cool. That's fun. I like that.
That's super, super easy. So if you are looking for a way to remote control something and you need to do it, well, in a more complicated way because you're awesome like that.
Yeah.
This is a really cool way to do it.
Hmm.
In fact, you know what? Hey, Wayne. I think we could build a project around this.
That's what I was like. I was like, if I tied this into a quadcopter, could I have it like drop water balloons, mechanism that? That would be cool.
And that's, I mean, think about it. A nano is super light. That relay is super light, but now I can activate all sorts of things without having to buy something that's specifically designed to be used on a receiver.
Very cool. I like it.
Yes, there be geeks in this house. When we come back, we got one more thing for people who have been addicted to GrowHow. We're going to tell you when too much light is too much. But before we get there, let's listen to these messages.
Previously on Twit.
The company is Digivina. I don't know if you remember this. Make your own vinyl record by using all the old plastic bottles in your house.
I love this idea.
You could be the first podcast
on vinyl.
Security Now.
Tavis Ormandy, our favorite security researcher, tweeted shortly after toweling himself off, "I had an epiphany in the shower and realized how to get code execution in LastPass. This is apparently very sophisticated, but also it's going to require some re-engineering."
The new screensavers.
I'm about to hop on Galactic Attack. It's a converted Kong roller coaster that brings a little Samsung Gear VR into the action. Mixed reality experience. Yep, we're in space.
Okay.
And we're about to die.
Ah! Yeah! Ah! Wow, this is really weird.
Twit. Technology for your eyes and ear holes.
Digivina is an April Fool's gag. I can't leave you hanging like this. There's no such thing. Although, if I were you, I'd make it.
And we are back listening to something that's kind of making me need to use the facilities.
Well, so we don't think about that. Let's talk about it.
let's talk
what's
about
happening
here? We've got a little something. Now, remember, we did a whole series on GrowHow. Mm-hmm. And then we came back a little bit. But some of the more basic questions have yet to be answered, which is why I'm so happy that we have Don B, who, what did he ask, Brian?
So Don asks, "Dear know-howers."
Whoers.
Whoers. "I've been catching up on my know-how episodes, and I absolutely love GrowHow. I've started growing tomatoes and peas in my 2x4 tent equipped with a 1,000-watt HID light. However, I am starting to wonder if I'm using too much light. I remember you saying that more light is better, but how much is too much? When will I know when I'm using too much light?"
Great question, and we've never actually addressed this, so thank you very much, Don B, for doing this.
It's like fertilizer. You can't use too much of it, right?
Oh, yes, you can.
Oh. Yeah.
We saw that in Las Vegas when you came to visit my parents.
That's right, yeah. Do never apply fertilizer directly to the plant.
Concentrated fertilizer. So basically taking out of the bottle, going, you know what, if a little bit is good, just pouring it straight on the plant should be awesome.
Well, I love how your dad said he had done it until you said, no, you're not supposed to do that. He's like, oh, your mom did that.
She totally did that, Okay, so this is a good question because people always want to know, how do I make it grow faster? And hopefully you've watched enough of Grow How to know that you can't just dump more fertilizer and expect the plant to thrive.
That's bad.
Will actually kill it, right? Mm-hmm. So is the same thing true for light? Can too much light kill a plant? The easy answer is no.
Oh.
Okay, let's move on. Thanks. Thank you very much for... No. It's more complicated than that because you cannot give a plant too much light. What you can give a plant too much of is heat, and heat is generated by the lights inside of our growing system, right?
Okay.
Yeah, that's the main issue. I mean, plants will either use the light or not. I mean, like, for example, when I'm growing, I only keep my lights on for between 12 and 16 hours because
that's the amount that they can use. Anything beyond that is wasted energy.
It's just wasted, right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I could keep my lights on 24 hours. It's not going to hurt the plants, but the plants aren't going to use it.
Right. So why?
So why do that? Now, the thing, though, is if I'm using so much light and using a really hot light source, it will stress the plants, and that's really, really bad. In fact, if you look at this, if you go to the overhead, see like the damage here?
Kind of. Yeah.
So those are actually burn spots. So what happened was this...
We didn't raise the platform.
We didn't raise the platform, and the plants grew up into the light. And it's not that, like, they got bleached out by the light. It's they got too close to the light source, which was too hot. And what will happen is it stresses the plant. When you stress the plant, you get weird burn spots. And that's literally what they are. They're burnt. They're
and
plant burns.
Our new nickname for this plant is Icarus, right?
He flew too close to the sun, right?
Poor little guy.
On leaves of sweet basil.
Oh, they smell so good.
I just love that. Mm-hmm. I just clipped these, by the way, so they won't flower. We're actually trying to let this go crazy again. You may have remembered this same group of plants we cut all the way back.
Like, this one, I'm surprised because we cut this to a nub.
Yeah.
Like, that shouldn't have done
little
anything.
Little nubby, look at that.
And he's coming back.
But see, the funny thing is that's what all of these looked like. And they've all re-expanded. They've all exploded. This one, it's sort of like... The runt at the table.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't grow up fast enough, so now it's not getting enough of the light. But okay, whatever. But let's go back to the light. So what I am worried about with his grow, because Don said he's using a 1,000-watt HID light.
Sounds pretty powerful.
In a 2x4 tent.
And probably generates a lot of heat.
Way too powerful.
Yeah.
Way too powerful. Like a 1,000-watt HID light is like something I would use in a 4x4x7 tent.
Okay, really tall.
It's really tall because it's... Especially HID, it's not LED. LED runs relatively cool, so I can get away with having my light, say, right about here. So on these plants, if it's there, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
HID, take this and go up by like 4 feet.
Because of all the heat it's generating.
All the heat that it's generating. It is a massive amount of heat because it's not LED. You're actually using energetic plasma in some of those, depending on what type of HID you're using.
Does it probably uses a lot more power too, doesn't it?
Oh, 1,000 watts.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to use a ton of power, and that power is being expended off as heat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can get away with a 2x4 tent using LEDs, but if you're using an HID, I drop that bad boy down to 500 and put it all the way at the top of the tent.
Okay.
Now, here's a quick note. You can get too far away.
Really?
Yes, because it's not going to hurt the plant, but what you'll see is the internode length, because plants will stretch to the light.
Mm-hmm.
The internode length, go to the side view, I think. The internode length, which is the distance between nodes, this is pretty good. So it's pretty compact. I kind of want compact.
I see.
If I put the light so far away, what will happen is like this internode length will expand. It will double.
It's stretching.
Right.
Because it's trying to reach.
It's trying to reach, which doesn't hurt the plant, but it's not being as productive as it could because now I have all that space of stem where I could have, you know, three different nodes of leaves, which is what I want for my basil.
Okay. How do you know if the light's... other than having the plant grow to that, like, a longer stem length, how do you know if it's too far away?
My rule of thumbs is I use the back of my hand. So I will put my hand, like this over my plant. I will leave it there for a minute. If it starts becoming uncomfortable on the back of my hand, my light's too close. Mm-hmm. If it's fine after a minute, then I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's super, super unscientific, yeah, but it does work.
It hurts bad. Bad for plant,
now,
bad
if,
for me.
If you have your hand there, and after 5 seconds, it really hurts, don't keep it there for the full minute. No, that's a pretty good indication that the light's too close.
It's like our soldering advice. If you start smelling chicken, it's too hot.
Stop.
Yeah,
stop. Yeah. So there you go. I mean, thank you, Don, again. Thank you very much for asking that, because I just realized we hadn't covered that. That's actually really important, because a lot of people, I mean, they'll try to put as much light as close as possible to the plants, and that's dangerous, not because of the light, but because of the heat. Remember, light good, heat bad.
Good, bad. Got it.
Yeah.
I'll remember that.
There you go. Yeah. Folks, we know that this was a lot of information. It's a feedback show. It's got to have a lot of information. Now, if you want everything from the growing tips to the schematics and the programming that I did for our little PWM switch, you can find everything in our show notes. Brian, where do they find that?
They can go to twit.tv/KH, and not only will you find the show notes and the links to, even if you wanted to buy the, what are these called again?
Aero Garden.
The Aero Garden. I almost call it the Aquavase.
I love this thing,
which is
man.
Our different project. Yeah. You can find those on twit.tv/KH, and also you can download the episode or subscribe.
Please subscribe. That's actually the best way to support the show. If you want to see more know-how, if you want to encourage us to do the projects that you want to do, make sure to subscribe against twit.tv/KH. Also, don't forget that you can find us on the social, specifically Google Plus. Go to Google Plus, look for Know How. There's a very short approval process to keep out all the spam accounts, but once you're in, you get access to almost 11,000 Kitas. That's our know-it-alls. These are people who can give you ideas for projects, maybe help you when you get stuck, or maybe you are an expert and you want to share your knowledge with the next generation of makers and DIYers. Again, Google Plus, and look for Know How.
That's how we get these questions for these feedback episodes. Yeah. So please, if you have a question, post it. But if you want to see what we're doing behind the scenes, or you want to message us directly, you can always do that on the Twitter. I am at @cranky_hippo.
And you're going to find me at @PadreSJ. And you're going to find the third member of our trio. He's a man of great integrity, a man of passion, a man who you need to listen to.
Who lives in the abyss.
Who lives in... Where are we right now?
Hold on.
Is this like a seashore? Mm. Are we in a... Who lives by the sea, evidently.
I can't tell.
That's right. His name is Jimbo. We call him Jimbo. Jimbo's been here for many, many years. You're going to be able to find Jimbo at twitter.com/ANELF3. That's ANELF3.
What was that? Where were we just
beach.
Now? Was
yeah,
that just
hey,
empty
Jimbo, where were we?
I need to know.
Who are you talking to?
Jimbo. Or Jimbo.
Oh, sorry. It's pronounced Alex.
Oh, okay. Oh,
I always get the pronunciation wrong.
Whatever.
I
it's
know.
Just a little windy over here.
Ah, that's,
oh,
what,
that's right.
At first, I thought it was like a dump truck driving by or something.
Anyways, until next time, I am Father Robert Ballas there.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how,
go ask more questions. Or don't. Or we'll answer them. Oh, it smells good.
It does.